what keeps most people up at night?
It's not politics.
It's money. Dave Ramsey helps you take control of it, one decision at a time. Real callers, real situations, and straight talk about getting out of debt, building wealth, and finally telling your money where to go.
Where to go.
Instead of wondering where it went.
Where it went.
Dave Ramsey, weeknights 7 to 10 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative, local, dependable. Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Smith was brought on as the new men's head basketball coach this month, and I'm confident that he will lead this championship-winning team to new heights as they begin competing at the Division I level. Own social media efforts for the announcement resulted in 500,000 views, more than 25,000 engagements, and 456 new followers, reflecting the excitement of our community for this new hire.
All we did was hire a basketball coach. Goodness. No, seriously, this is a really good illustration. Manny Diaz at the UWF board meeting talking about Tanner Smith, the hire for men's basketball at the Argos, and how being a Division I school and it, you know, moving into that and then hiring somebody for the basketball team creates a massive news item that gets you lots of exposure and raises your reputation, and kind of like welcome to what it's like to be in the media and social media for a Division I school.
Public relations efforts garnered nearly 47 media stories valued at nearly $400,000, also reaching an audience of more than 500,000. I mean, you start to see here when we were talking about the Division I movement, the impact that it's going to have on the institution.
Yeah, it's just a different ball game, right?
This is the kind of publicity that you cannot buy, right? And we're not going to get that at the Division II level. And you're starting to see just the coach hire and the conversations and how many times UWF's name, UWF's images come up. And that's what we start to talk about when we start to talk about growth and profile. And so you see that a microcosm, and we'll go into more of that a little later. But as you can see, it's an incredible impact on the institution as a whole.
And that was, again, that was, you know, just the basketball coach, right? Or, you know, which, you know, you might think, well, that's, I mean, it is basketball, it's a big deal. But okay, but it's a coach. What about the actual move itself?
The transition to D1 garnered, let's talk about this visibility report, right? 1.4 million views and more than 37,000 interactions on social media. Additionally, the public relations efforts garnered 400 media stories valued at $2.5 million and reaching an audience of more than 3.5 million people.
3.5 million people reached through 400 different media stories, estimated value about $2.5 million. You know, if they had to pay for it, what would that be worth to them? The transition, now, you know, it's not like we can run that again. You know, it's kind of a once in an ever sort of thing, but it's just an example of how being or moving to Division One, this is an example of what it's like to do Division One type things and how the media presence and, again, the reputational reach and the awareness reach for potential students or student athletes or, you know, teachers, the difference in both like what your degree might be worth and what people perceive your degree as being worth.
I think you can see what I wanted to do here is make sure that you can actually look at these numbers and try to get that into your head of what we were able to achieve for the university from a visibility perspective with one announcement, right? And this is something, again, we wouldn't be able to do as a Division II school.
So the move to D1, both in terms of getting you attention for your basketball coach hire, but also the move itself. But then the flip side is, well, it's not free, right? Moving up to D1 is not a free thing. It costs a substantial amount of money, both the start, the facilities, and then the ongoing payments that you have to make to be a part of. Of course, you'll generate more revenue, and you know there's a lot of headaches, but there's a lot of blessings as well. One of the issues that they took up at the board meeting was that $2 per credit hour increase in the athletic fee. Rebecca Matthews.
We'll continue on with Dr. Anderson. She's our vice president of the Division of Academic Engagement and Student Affairs. to present number 8, a proposed increase in student athletic fee.
Now, if you remember, people were raising the issue of, oh, sure, we go to D1 and all of a sudden we raise the fees. Well, I'm like, yeah, okay. And it wasn't that much. It was $2 per credit hour. So if you're a full-time student now, I think a full-time is 15, so that's $30 an hour or a semester. If you calculate it at 12 an hour, which is kind of the minimum I think of as full-time, but that's $24 an hour. Mary Anderson, she's the vice president for academic engagement, student affairs.
Requesting that the board consider a proposed $2 per credit hour increase to the student athletic fee in support of the university's transition to Division I athletics.
Now, if you remember, I think the kind of perception about this was that it was sort of an invention of the administration. It was imposed upon the students, that it was kind of a, you know, an executive penalty, if you want to think of it that way, for going to Division I. Well, it turns out that they have actually been looking at this for some time, and students were very involved in the decision-making process to levy the $2 fee.
In January, the university convened an ad hoc student athletic fee committee jointly appointed by President Diaz and the Student Government Association president at that time, Trista Bennett, with at least 50% student representation to ensure a strong student voice. The committee met twice, received detailed briefings from athletics as well as finance and administration, and after discussion, unanimously recommended this increase, contingent upon the university moving to Division I.
Okay, so the students were involved in this process, met twice, talked about it, what it would, you know, how much would it be? Well, $2 per credit hour. Why do we need to do this? And unanimously supported it. Now, I want to be 100% on board, but I do know that, you know, when Rebecca Matthews went to the state and told them about how we selected Manny Diaz, there were some, let's just say, factual discrepancies with reality. But I don't have any reason to believe that took place here. And it sounds like this process was, you know, collaborative with the students who were explained, here's what we're doing, here's what we're trying to accomplish, here's what it's going to cost you.
And I also just want to be clear about some of the impacts for students. For a full-time student taking 12 credit hours, this equates to approximately $24 per semester. So that's a modest increase, especially when considering the context. We haven't had a fee increase since 2014, which is over a decade ago.
Yeah, hadn't done this for a long time. And you know what? I forget the number. I think it's 22 and it's going to 24 per credit hour, if I remember correctly. It's somewhere in that vicinity, 18 going to 20, 20 going to 22, something like that. Anyway, so why are they doing it? What's the value to the student? Because, you know, it's one thing to, well, you know, we got to raise a bunch of money. And if you do the math, you're talking about somewhere in the vicinity of $900,000 a year, $800,000 a year, depending on the number of students and courses taken and so forth. But if you multiply it out, that's what you're talking about. And the ongoing cost of being in D1, I'm going on memory here, but I remember it being somewhere in the $1 million a year vicinity. So this is how we're going to pay for it. You might say, well, okay, it's fine enough to pass it off on the end user, but what do they get for it?
Again, we heard this morning that there's a clear institutional value proposition. Increased visibility and recognition associated with Division I athletics strengthens the university brand. This visibility contributes to reputation, recruitment, and ultimately the perceived value of the UWF degree. And finally, this fee provides a dedicated restricted revenue stream to support the transition and ongoing costs associated with Division I athletics.
So the benefit you get as a student is more people have heard of your school. When you wear UWF Argos t-shirt or sweatshirt and you're in, I don't know, Tennessee, the chances that people will have heard of you are higher, and the chances that they will have a higher perception of you because you're now a Division I school are much higher. That same thing isn't just true when you're out and about wearing a t-shirt, but it's when you're going for job interviews or making applications. Instead of UW what? It's, you know, people will have heard of you. And also, because you come from Florida and Florida's college system, that's an additional bump. We'll talk about that later. But the point is that it does something for the student. It gives you better services, better access to events. It's going to have an impact on the quality of student life on campus, in addition to actually having a value for you as a student with a degree from a place that is now a Division I school. And it establishes a recurring funding source, which is always a challenge when you've created a new, you know, essentially a liability every year that you've got to pay this fee.
I think when this university's leadership discussed having this increase, I think the word increase, you know, brings a little bit of nervousness and fear to this idea of what students will have to pay. But you know, when we look at a $2 increase versus, which is BOT number 11 on the agenda, you know, the university has found a way to offset these costs by providing a parking solution, which is, hey, if you reverse your car in, you will have a tag. And I don't want to misspeak, but I believe it's at no cost.
Yeah, this is such a fascinating story to me that I did not know this about UWF. And again, we've had, you know, one student, you know, my oldest graduated from there. My middle is there now. And my youngest is probably going to stay at PSC, but they all went to PSC because he wants to do nursing. And I think we're going to do it. You could do it either at UWF or PSC. Both are very good programs. Anyway, they voted for this. It was unanimous, uncontroversial. But did you catch what he mentioned? They're not, I can't remember, PJ, your kids are not old enough to have been in college yet, right? Or do you have one, do you have a kid at UWF?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Parking at UWF is terrible, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's great if you have the right permit, but the worry that you're going to park in the wrong place, which is true of a lot of college campuses, right? Most college campuses, parking is a kind of a bugaboo. A lot of times you deal with the college has its parking and the college is nestled within a city that also has its parking, and they're two very separate and difficult things to navigate. University campuses are notorious for having parking issues. Did you know, and maybe you didn't, that's why I ask, did you know that there is a separate fee of $25 per semester for the privilege of backing into the parking space?
I did not.
Yeah. Did you know that you're supposed to pull front in?
Right.
So that their scanners can pick up the license plates, because in Florida we don't have front plates.
Mm-hmm.
So they charge a fee of $25 if you want to be able to back into a space and then to pull out, which is typically people are more prone to do that if they have, say, a truck or a van or something like that. And that is actually not prohibitive. Well, I did not know this at all. And so that was what he was talking about with the offset of the $12 credit hours times $2.24. But if you're waiving the back-in fee and not requiring them to have special accommodation for that, now you're giving back $24 a semester for the students who are paying for that to begin with. Dan Lucas is the Vice President of Finance and Administration.
Looking for approval to revise UWF Regulation 5.001, parking and registration. We're proposing we eliminate the back-in tag fee. We do need to maintain back-in tags, so we will give them away for free. Because they are utilized by the scanners, but we wanted to reduce the fee at the same time we were doing the Division I move.
So my understanding, going a little bit on, you know, kind of inferring it all from what I do know, is I guess you pay for the privilege of having a hang tag on your rearview mirror so they can still scan something, but it won't be your license plate that they're scanning because, you know, obviously if you're pulled in that way, you can't scan the license plate, at least not so easily. So that was part of their solution is, you know, technology allowing that, giving that away instead of charging for it. Eli Schatz, who is the new student representative on the board for the, SGA, basically.
The thing on the agenda that students are very excited for, they were very upset that we got rid of the ability to back in and the tag thing. I don't think it was quite ever explained to the student body how it worked. And so there was a lot of confusion with students getting tickets. And In my experience talking to students about this change, they've been very excited that they'll be able to back in again. And as a student myself who used to drive a minivan, it's very nice to be able to back in instead of pull straight out and then have to pull out because it is kind of hard to park. So I do really appreciate the change.
Oh my gosh. Parking is always a hot topic. Always.
It definitely is. That's Chair Rec Matthews. And again, Eli represents the students, and he says you have no idea how excited people are. Here's what the regulation said. Nose-in parking, they're calling it, as opposed to front-end parking, remains required in all parking garages to allow license plate readers and to minimize hazards. Vehicles backed into garage space will be cited. Back-in parking is permitted in surface lots only and is prohibited in garages, angled spaces, and other restricted areas. Students, faculty, staff, and visitors may purchase a back-in hang tag for $25 a year. Back-in tag is supplemental, must be purchased with a valid campus parking permit, so you have to buy both. If another hang tag is in use, the back-in tag must be on the front so that they can see it. And then there's ADA accommodations and things like that. So this was one of the more, I didn't ever even think there would be such a thing, but it's a byproduct of Florida having back license plates only. Manny Diaz.
And I want to highlight, because I think it was missed here, of the extent of what you're doing here is this is a $25 per semester fee that is being removed. So it's not a small, I mean, in the grand scheme, it is small, but it's a reduction. And I think this is an example of the university leadership working well and working with our student representatives, listening to the issues and admitting that whatever that policy was not the right policy and that we can do things better for our students. And so it comes at it's very timely, it is a, just want to be clear, it is $25 a semester that goes to zero. So Want to make sure the board is aware of that as you take this action.
And they did pass that unanimously. Now, obviously, that will not offset the cost of the increase in the athletic fee for all students, and especially, I mean, it even wouldn't be all of it even for a student who has 15 hours. They're paying $30 a year. But, you know, they did the both of these at the same meeting, both unanimously. I just thought it was wild. I'd never heard of a school prohibiting you from pulling back in and also charging you a fee for the privilege of pulling your car backwards into the parking space. But apparently UWF has been doing that. They will no longer be doing that. There is no longer a charge. So you can just do it and you'll just get a hang tag, I guess, for free. 525 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
This is a special alert to all Americans who own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles with an auto warranty about to expire or with no warranty coverage at all. Due to a decline in the economy, CarShield is announcing a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that is now available to the public to save any driver out-of-pocket expenses on future auto repairs. Call now to find out how you can pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Yes, you heard that correctly. Pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. An open phone line has been established for all drivers to call for a free quick quote. Call 800-478-6430 now. Drivers who are covered will not have to pay for covered repairs again. This protection plan is at an all-time low. Additionally, drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Call us for your free quick quote today. 800-478-6430. That's 800-478-6430. What do you have to lose? Call 800-478-6430. Again, 800-478-6430.
Big renovation plans? Don't pay big prices. Now, Home Outlet in-store doorbuster deals are live. Save $2 a square foot on hybrid waterproof oak flooring. Now just $198. Interior door units, any size, starting at only $99. Or upgrade your bathroom vanity for just $219. Plus, deep savings on countertops, exterior doors, bathroom fixtures, and more. But hurry, these doorbuster deals won't last. In-store at Home Outlet Pensacola location only. Find us at homeoutlet.com.
As a small business owner, what keeps you up at night? Just knowing if your email got hacked or your phone system went down, it could cost you thousands in revenue, as well as your reputation. That's where Data Revolution comes in with their unique position to take care of you and your business IT support, phone systems, cybersecurity, and more. Secure it and sleep better at night by going to datarevs.com. Winner of the 2021 Best of the Bay for IT support, datarevs.com.
Don't you hate it when you wake up and feel like you already missed something important? The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. Weekdays, 5 to 9. News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
B-E-A-U people.
So you know how there's this thing called the War Powers Act that requires the president to notify Congress of military action, and then 60 days after it begins, he has to, or before 60 days expires, he has to go before them and say, hey, here's what's going on. I need your authorization to continue doing this. There are certain circumstances where he can extend it to 90 days, but the idea is that Congress has the power to declare war, and the president should not have the power to engage in war without the declaration from Congress, right? That's an idea. It's a check and balance against the president as the commander-in-chief of the military, being able to do whatever he wants with, you know, all of those big, beautiful gray boats and those, you know, beautiful gray planes and, you know, those men in their uniforms and their our satellites. I mean, you get the point, okay? So we are right up against it. It's today. Is the 60. Is the president going to Congress? Funny thing about that. The answer is no. Because his theory, as expressed by Pete Hegseth, Secretary of War, and also other sources, is what war? Well, we're not in a war. Well, but aren't you with Iran? Where's the shooting? Well, you got all these forces mobilized, and you got aircraft carriers, and you got, you know, men and women and, you know, other ships and submarines and airplanes. Well, yeah, but they're not shooting. What do you mean they're not shooting? Well, we're in a ceasefire. So the war is over. So we don't have to ask Congress for authorization to do a thing that we're not actually doing. So there's no war to see here. Go home. It's over. So, yes, historically, presidents have tried to engage in all sorts of creative, legal, technical workarounds of what is apparently a very inconvenient fact of the War Powers Act. And so, you know, this is not the first time that a president has tried to avoid the 60 or the 90-day accountability and going to Congress to act. Presidents have argued that, well, we're involved in military action, but it's like low-key military action. It doesn't quite raise to the level of a war. It's not intense enough. I'm kidding. I mean, I'm not kidding. This is actually something that has been done before. This legally probably doesn't hold water enough, but it is the current position of the president. What I wonder is, like, if we resume hostilities because whatever, the negotiations fail or the president decides, hey, it's Wednesday, let's go again, would that, in his view, constitute a new war? You know, can you just, like, go on break for a little bit and you can have, you know, 60 days on, 2 days off, 48 days on, 3 days off, and just do war forever without any war? I mean, I'm sure the Supreme Court would think that's probably not in line with them.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. It's the first trip for President Trump following the latest attempt on his life. The president stops at the Villagers retirement community in Florida, pitching a new way to save for your golden years.
Aimed at workers who don't have traditional 401k plans through their employers. So we're talking about freelance workers, small business owners, and part-time employees. The EEO directs the Treasury Department to launch a site called TrumpIRA.gov that would provide a list of IRA providers and allow users to compare the options.
Fox's Madeline Rivera, money flowing to the Department of Homeland Security. The shutdown ends at 76 days. House Speaker Mike Johnson.
We got the budget resolution passed. This is very, very important because that will ensure that border security and immigration enforcement will continue today and well into the future.
It funds all of DHS except ICE and CBP. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne, and right now we've got 68 degrees with mostly cloudy skies, and we will get a more in-depth check of our forecast with Marion Caldwell from Channel 3. That's up in a few minutes. The city of Pensacola is requesting $50,000 in Tourist Development Council funding to help pull off Wednesday's Keela Richardson homecoming concert. Mayor D.C. Reeves says that investment, though, is a bargain compared to what all that exposure is worth.
When you talk about a commercial on the finale of American Idol costs $750,000, I think to get a four-minute run to the entire world on what a great city and what a great community this is priceless. And so, I mean, that is a fraction of a fraction of the cost that something like this would normally be to shine such an amazing light on the city. So,
and the mayor says the event budget would cover staging, security, police, and fire costs. They're working with Visit Pensacola, Escambia County, the Sheriff's Office, the Blue Wahoos, all his partners, and says several local businesses have also reached out asking how they could help to sponsor that event. Of course, that event is contingent on Keela making the top three on American Idol this coming Monday. Two people were wounded in a shooting at Forest Creek Apartments in the Warrington area on Thursday. Deputies responded to that incident about 6:15 last night following reports of a large fight that preceded the gunfire. A man was shot in the leg. A woman was shot in the hip. Both of those injuries are not life-threatening. No suspect has been identified as of yet. An investigation into that incident is ongoing. Escambia County has now deployed more than 380 tons of concrete. This is from the old Pensacola Bay Fishing Bridge to create a new artificial reef. 46 pieces of concrete from the old bridge, which was damaged during Hurricane Sally in 2020, were placed 5 nautical miles southeast of Pensacola Pass in 43 feet of water. County officials say the complex shapes of the concrete pieces provide excellent habitat for snapper, grouper, and triggerfish. It'll also serve as a spawning site for Gulf flounder. That site is also open for divers to explore. An 18-year-old Louisiana man is facing several charges after reportedly fleeing deputies, then crashing into another vehicle in Escambia County on Thursday. The Florida Highway Patrol says Peyton Jackson of Darrow filed a traffic stop or fled a traffic stop, rather, for an expired tag, then hit a white Hyundai. That happened near Mobile Highway and Massachusetts Avenue. Jackson was later located and arrested. He faces charges of fleeing and eluding, hit and run, and driving without a valid license. No injuries were reported. It's 5:34. Let's get a look at our forecast with Brooke Richardson.
Rain continues to wrap up the week. Temperatures will be on the cooler side with that rain in the forecast. Temperatures only topping out in the upper 60s and low 70s this afternoon. Rain will become heavier as the day goes on, really picking up overnight and into early Saturday morning. But it moves out of here, leaving us with drier weather going into Saturday afternoon as well as Sunday. I'm meteorologist Marianne Caldwell. We are WEAR First Warning Weather Forecast.
And we've got cloudy skies, 68 degrees in Pensacola, 68 in Gulf Breeze. And seeing a few reports of showers and 67 degrees in Milton. Your next news at 6. Breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
With your money now. Drivers across the country are bracing themselves as they pull up to the gas pump. That's because U.S. gas prices have soared to their highest level in 4 years. AAA data says the national average currently sits at $4.39 per gallon. American drivers are now paying $1.32 more per gallon than they did before the Iran war. The NASDAQ composite wrapped its best month since April of 2020, climbing over 15%. Strong earnings reports across big tech have helped fuel the rally. The sector has had a slow start to the year as artificial intelligence caused disruption fears. Apple said the blowout demand for its flagship iPhone 17 and the MacBook Neo helped power a solid sales forecast and sent its shares up roughly 4%. Apple, though, warned of continuing chip supply constraints, and the forecast underscored how it was fending off supply chain pressures and rising memory chip costs. Futures are currently mixed as the Iran war continues. Thursday, the Dow Industrials gained 790. That's your money now.
Hey, Dave Ramsey here. You've heard me talk about one car dealership in Pensacola, Frontier Motors at 230 Beverly Parkway. Folks, new cars lose 11% of their value the second you drive them off the lot. So for years, Frontier Motors has been saving Pensacola residents thousands of dollars by getting them into the best previously owned vehicles. And thousands of people have enjoyed Frontier Motors' no hassle, no pressure experience. Just the best slightly used vehicles in town at a fair price. But don't take my word for it. Look around and you'll start noticing all the Frontier Motors decals and tags. They're everywhere. So if you're in the market for a vehicle, do yourself a favor and see the friendly folks and the huge inventory at Frontier Motors. You can't miss them. Just look for the big buffalo on the lot. That's Frontier Motors at 230 Beverly Parkway. And don't forget to tell them Dave Ramsey said hey.
Attention on deck, Pensacola. Mark your calendars for the Pensacola Navy Days celebration, May 8th through the 10th, presented by Navy Federal Credit Union and the Pensacola Ice Flyers. As the cradle of naval aviation, Pensacola's relationship with the military runs deep. This exciting event celebrates our ties to the armed forces, honoring those serving at Naval Air Station Pensacola and beyond. Navy Days kicks off on Friday, May 8th, with a golf tournament and black tie night at the museum gala at the National Naval Aviation Museum. On Saturday, May 9th, don't miss the 4K run walk and patriotic parade through downtown Pensacola. The festivities continue at Plaza de Luna with a family fun fest. And Sunday, May 10th, join us at Museum Plaza for a special Modern El Dorados concert presented by the City of Pensacola. Join residents and visitors alike in celebrating over two centuries of Pensacola's ties to the world's finest military forces. Visit PensacolaNavyDays.org for details, lodging specials, and how to get involved.
You're already listening.
News Radio 92.3, I'm Andrew McKay.
So you might as well stay smart all day.
It's Pensacola Morning News.
From Pensacola Morning News in the morning to Pep Talk with Megan mid-morning, NVR late morning to afternoon, so you do it from 2 to 4, and Pensacola right now with Chris and Austin through your drive home. News that moves with you all day long.
All day long.
On News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative.
Informative.
Local.
Local.
Dependable.
Dependable.
Yeah. So seductive. I take you to the candy shop. I let you the lollipop.
So that additional 1.8 million people
Are they all Republican? Why is the map so red, especially the one that was sent to Fox News?
Senator Gates.
Thank you, Mr. President. In my dreams, they would all be Republicans. But I don't believe that that is the case.
In my dreams, they would all be Republicans. I got to give credit to Don Gates, our state senator, yesterday managing the conversation around the redistricting. Incredibly statesmanlike and also occasionally, when justified, quite funny, as is the norm, if you know Don. And I do. Not that, I mean, I know him okay. I wouldn't say we're like the closest people or anything, but, you know, that is absolutely a good representation of him. In my dreams, they would all be Republicans. Joining us now, Alex Andrade, who I know also has a great deal of respect for Senator Gates. Alex, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, our state representative from District 2.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
Hey, good morning. And by the way, in his extended time as our representative, you know, under normal circumstances, you would have been done with the job. But you get this extra session, you get a budget extra session coming in 2 weeks. The governor just must want you back in Tallahassee a lot.
He just misses me so much.
Yeah, I figured that was the case. All right. First of all, let's just get it out of the way. The budget session is coming in 2 weeks, right?
Yes. So starting May 12th, the House and the Senate, we will reconstitute our budgets. The agreement has been we will repass in both the House and the Senate the identical budgets that we pass during session to put them in the right posture for us to then go into the negotiation. We call it conference, where you'll see offers back and forth over the course of several days so we can negotiate our budget. I'm very excited that we're going to have public negotiations this year. It'll feel good to actually have some, transparency and, engagement in that process again.
All right. Very good. Well, we'll look forward to, I never can honestly say I look forward to budget discussions, but it is the big business of government and it is how money and taxes work. So it's important, obviously. And before we get to the redistricting, which is the big thing, the special session had been called for redistricting, vaccines, and AI. And my read was that the legislature, both House and Senate, essentially told DeSantis to pound sand on doing AI and vaccines right now, right?
Well, no. I mean, the Senate, they had a bill on AI and a bill on vaccines, but the House, no one filed anything. And to the point about what's the reason for a special session, special sessions, by virtue of their name, should be only in special circumstances. DeSantis, we as the Florida House, we've passed vaccine and medical freedom bills in the past, last legislative session, we passed the medical freedom bill. But, DeSantis tried again on specific policies on medical freedom and AI this year, and they both died during regular session. Failing in your attempts at advocating for a bill during regular session does not, satisfy the threshold that I think is required for you to call a special session.
Agreed.
It's closer to a tantrum than a justifiable reason to have a special. So, he tried during regular session, didn't work. So we just didn't see the importance of it.
What about property taxes? That keeps being we're going to do it, but that didn't happen either, right? And that's still not scheduled to happen either, right?
DeSantis has hinted at the fact that he will propose a weaker, less stringent property tax proposal than the Florida House passed, and he will do it sometime in June. So even when we're done with the budget, he'll still want to see my face in Tallahassee. So can't wait to spend more time with our great governor.
And super conveniently, that would come after all of the preliminary budget work that's being done by every local government. So cool. Okay, we'll move on. Just enough for now. So I have questions about the decision that was made yesterday. This is my chance to wrangle with you just a little bit. I've been doing a lot of explaining of what happened yesterday and how it was intended. My own take was this seems so clearly to benefit our party, your party, my party, Republicans, that it was a partisan violation of Section, 20, I think is the congressional one, of Article 3. It was so clearly a partisan benefit that would cause me to absolutely oppose it under normal circumstances. The only way I can talk myself into holding my nose and supporting it is given what's happened in Virginia and California and is happening around the country and the effort to steal the next House election by redistricting inappropriately. Your thoughts?
Well, are we debating about disparate intent or disparate outcome, right? Like, and a lot of times when you're talking about, you know, the net effect of something versus the intent of something, they're two different answers. You know, I don't happen to think the criminal justice system is inherently racist just because our prison population has higher concentration of certain races over others. You know, like that's the outcome versus opportunity is always the type of, you know, question. But at the forefront right now, because that Calais decision came out, you know, prior to us in the House voting on it or the Senate voting on it, and it said you cannot draw a map based on race outside of exceptions that didn't apply here.
Right.
We did draw maps based on race in 2022. That's how the case law, that's how the Supreme Court decisions that had come out previously required us to do it. And by the way, the Fair Districts Amendment in the Florida Constitution said you can't diminish, you know, so presumably the interpretation of that is if you have six majority minority districts in 1960, regardless of how populations moved, shifted, changed, 60 years later, you can't have less than six, you know, minority majority districts, which became untenable. That's right. When we got gerrymandered. The only districts that were gerrymandered in the state of Florida in 2022 were the ones that we felt we had to, based on case law, to comply with that. So the only ones that were gerrymandered were Democrat performing majority minority districts. We did away with gerrymandering based on race yesterday, based on these maps. Whether or not, you know, the folks that drew it, you know, had specific or hyper aggressive partisan intent, I challenge you to hold up the map that was passed yesterday in Florida and the way those districts are drawn to the maps of Illinois, Virginia, and California, and tell me which one is gerrymandered.
Well, and that's, and again, so that's, those are, to me, those are two kind of answers in tension with each other. Because everything you said in the beginning, I agree with, and everything that you said in the end, I agree with, but did Florida draw maps that are compact, geographically aligned, race blind, or did they draw maps that are, you know, compact, geographically aligned, race blind, and to partisan advantage? And it's the and to partisan advantage part that looks problematic. So I know, Alex, you've had much more time, Alex Andrade, you've had much more time to look at the particulars of the maps. You know the state maps a lot better than I do. Some of the objections that were raised during the debate yesterday about, you know, carving up districts or drawing lines that, you know, looked problematic for political purpose, even putting aside that the no partisan gerrymandering part of the Fair District Amendment has probably been struck down now because it can't be severed from the other parts, I still don't want them to be gerrymandered for political purpose. You look at the maps. Do the maps accomplish the goal of ending the race-based drawing? Do you think they were drawn for partisan advantage? Those are the two questions.
The first question, yes, I think it addresses race-based.
Okay.
Maps, it complies with the Calais decision, and it provided the justification to pass the map yesterday. As far as the partisan advantage, I'm trying to figure out the best analogy. You draw your maps, you have like 15 different options, and you make sure that the program that you use to draw those maps does not at all have any data set that references the registration of each household.
Okay.
You draw those 15 maps, and then you send those maps to 20 of your friends, and two of them, you know, say, like, plug them into a different data set to figure out which one has the most Republican districts in it based on registration. At some point, someone's going to plug that data set in. I don't know if it's the first person that's drawing the map or the, you know, the 160th person voting on it when it gets to the legislature. Everyone will know, like, the party registration of each district before it's passed by the legislature just by virtue of the fact that we're human, competitive, and we'd like to know and try and predict in game. I don't have a crystal ball, cannot tell you how these maps will perform in November as far as partisan performance.
Right.
And it's just as likely that by diluting Republicans out of, you know, some districts and, you know, having some like more weak Republican registration districts, you lose seats. I mean, that is just as distinct a possibility because you're spreading out, your Republican votes at the same time that you're redistributing, map districts.
Yeah, if you crack dark blue into light blue, it can only be done by also cracking dark red into light red. I mean, that's by definition. Yeah. If you're going to gain Republicans in a district, you have to have lost them somewhere else, right?
Exactly, and it's the same with the race-based considerations. I've always looked at it by, okay, if we're going to concentrate all minority votes into this one congressional district, aren't we essentially just putting them in a corner? You draw maps that are compact and contiguous, and then suddenly, if 15% of the vote is suddenly a minority vote in this district that was 100% white or majority previously, well, then suddenly some enterprising candidate is going to realize I could go and focus on this 15% and have a distinct advantage. By focusing on race or even focusing on something like, party registration, you're doing yourself a disservice because while folks might think voters are dumb, they're not. And, partisan performance and outcome in November is going to depend on the quality of candidates, how hard they work, how folks feel about the way and the trajectory of the country. Just because we drew some maps that are compact and contiguous, like you look at our map and it does not look gerrymandered, whereas I challenge you to look at California's and Illinois and tell me the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Or the old Florida maps or the previous Florida maps that we've remedied. I mean, it's really crazy to look at those. And especially with the high percentage of no party affiliate, or just plain independent, even if they're not registered in that way, you don't know exactly. Because as you say, on the one hand, it's not like they're all Republicans. On the second hand, many people, actually vote for people instead of voting for party. And so it's a question of what happens. And I actually loved what Jason Pizzo had to say yesterday, in the sense that if this is such an outrage, if this is such a horrible violation of good ethics or law, then, ride the blue wave, baby. You guys are going to win huge in November. And that'll kind of prove the point that the voters really do care about this and that it was wrong to have done.
Yeah. And all I can say is when you look at the map, like, I feel like Taylor Swift would love it. There are zero snakes in our map. Like, there's no snakes.
Nice. Which is always the for people, that's if you look at the Louisiana map that the Supreme Court struck down, I mean, that was an obviously gerrymandered district. I mean, so obviously that you can't not think that. Same as in Illinois, as you said, same as in California and so forth. The next implication, and I know, this isn't exactly your domain to decide, it's the county commission, but the practical application, particularly of Calais, is it looks to me like District 3 in Escambia County, which produces a majority-minority district, a black district, that is, even when we did redistricting, we were literally counting black and white voters to make sure that we had the right percentage, for County Commission, Escambia School Board, and also for the ECUA. That looks unconstitutional to me now. What do you think?
As they say, it's unconstitutional because it was done in compliance with, court order, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Whether or not the impetus of Calais would justify or require if someone filed a suit against the county to redraw their maps and eliminate any discussion or consideration of race is a different question. If I'm, the commissioners, I might want to take up, get a legal opinion sooner rather than later, and then, maybe consider, redrawing the map. And it doesn't have to look that much different. Like, they could literally take up an identical county commission map, say, we're going to pass this map that is nearly identical solely because, the voters in each district are familiar with their numbers. That would be sufficient.
Yeah.
It's not some earth-shattering, but they might have to actually retake up the question of their maps and say, okay, we gotta eliminate all discussion of race when we're talking about this.
Yeah, and in the future, redistricting is going to come again in a few years. Certainly, we're going to have to not have the conversation about how many whites were moving here and how many blacks were moving there. One last quick question for you, Alex, before we let you go is, on seeking a legal opinion about that redistricting, would they be coming to ask future county attorney Alex Andrade about this problem?
if you thought for a second that yeah, no, no, not in my future, not even a consideration. Love the commissioners, love the county staff. No, I'm good. I'll pass.
that is as hard a pass as I have ever heard you make on anything. And I figured that would be the case for all kinds of reasons. Alex, as always, thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Andrew.
Absolutely. And by the way, you know, it is going to be interesting to see how Escambia County, and I think maybe City Council, deals with this issue. It's particularly acute because Escambia County's entire system of commission districts, which also applies to school board, which also applies to ECUA, was crafted for the purpose of creating a black representative on those bodies by majority-minority districting. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens now, if anything. Now, somebody might bring a lawsuit that would force the issue. Commissioners might take up the issue. I'm not so optimistic about that. But what he was saying is that they could just go to the, you know, the next discussion and say, you know what, people are accustomed to these maps. Let's just keep these maps. You know, even though they were originally drawn with race in mind, we still think these represent the identities and political boundaries that are sort of normal for Escambia County citizens. And so we'll just go forward with this. Whether that would hold up in court, I don't know. But you could easily see a future in which the maps are completely different, or even in which we go to more of the Santa Rosa County system of having not the single member districts, but having the at large, where, you know, you don't vote for your commissioner, you vote for all commissioners, and it's just that they have to live in the district that they represent. So we'll see. I don't know how this is going to play out legally. All I know is that the old way of drawing the maps on the basis of counting black and white voters is no longer constitutional, according to the Supreme Court. I mean, they were talking about Congress, but the same rule absolutely would have to apply when you're talking about, you know, commission districts as well. Hey, if you wake up in the morning and you feel great, wonderful, outstanding, probably you don't need a new mattress. But if you wake up in the morning feeling achy, pains, pinched, like you have to recover from your recovery, you know, you have to refresh from your refreshing, hey, could be you need a new mattress. And chances are, if I'm talking about this and you're kind of cringing, it's because you know it's true. And you know the reason you don't go get one is, well, partially because cost, right? Good mattresses are not cheap, but a mattress is really a kind of health care, medical care. So the fact that it costs a little bit of money in order to get a very good night's sleep shouldn't really surprise you. And it is a good investment in your quality of life and well-being. But also, you've been putting it off because you don't want to go to the mattress store. You don't like dealing with those people. You don't like the idea of it. They all seem the same. How do you start? Am I going to get harassed? Okay, I mean, I understand. Same, okay? The sleep center is different. They've been there for 30 years, and the idea is let's let people learn at their own pace. We'll leave them alone if we want to. No commission, no pressure. The best selection in town, the best service in town, the best price in town. Like, their salespeople learn by delivering mattresses, not by selling. So they get to see what the customer experience is first before they ever set foot in the showroom and talk to people about what they want to buy. But they are there for you to get the best mattress at a good price and fantastic service. The Sleep Center on the north side of Creighton, just east of Davis Highway. If you've ever been mistreated by a mattress or by a mattress store, check them out.
Tired of your roof playing peekaboo with the rain? Call Quality Roofing. They fix leaks faster than your neighbor borrows your lawnmower.
Thank you, neighbor.
Whether it's storm damage or shingles gone wild, their expert team handles it all. No duct tape required. With top quality materials and service so good, even your mother-in-law will approve, especially their lifetime workman warranty. Don't wait for your ceiling to start drip-dropping. Call Quality Roofing Solutions. Quality Roofing Solutions, because your house deserves a hat that actually fits.
Bands on the Beach, presented by the Santa Rosa Island Authority, every Tuesday night at 7 at the Gulfside Pavilion on Pensacola Beach. It's hot in the summer, but you can bring a blanket or a lawn chair and relax and enjoy the sunset with your favorite bands.
Kicking back. When the sun goes down.
This week, Southern Breeze blows into Pensacola Beach with their original blend of rock and country, acoustic, and southern rock hits at Bands on the Beach at the Gulfside Pavilion. Remember, no pets and no glass.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us today at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
something important happens,
you don't have time to wait.
Breaking news lives here.
Here.
On News Radio 92.3, 95.3 and AM 1620.
What do you need, son?
Need to borrow your boat.
Yes, it's a remake, Flunk, doing that classic from New Order. One of the things we got a new note about yesterday, that Escambia County has been, of course, demolishing the old fishing bridge that got destroyed during Sally or damaged during Sally. What are they doing with all those giant chunks of concrete? They're throwing them out in the bay or out in the Gulf to turn them into a reef out in our reefing site 5 miles off of the pass. So very, very cool use of that concrete.
Stream us at newsradio923.com. Newsradio 92.3. WNRP Golf Breeze.